During this National Pet Month, listeners are apt to hear many stories about man, woman, and their pets, but perhaps none as compelling as the one by Colin Campbell. The author joins me now to talk about his book entitled Free Days with George. Colin, welcome to Newsworks Tonight.
Thanks for having us, Dave.
Yours is a story where, in a sense, the hunter got captured by the game.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, it's something that was very unexpected in my life, and I was given some strong encouragement by friends to adopt a dog and save a life, and in the process, possibly help my own, and it's exactly how it worked out.
But where the book opens, life was going great.
It
until
was.
It wasn't.
Yeah, like, yeah, for the first 10 pages, it's going pretty great. But unfortunately, you know, the sad reality was that I came home from a business trip. I had a very, you know, decent career and happily married and had a nice house, all those normal things. And I came home from a business trip one day and my wife, who I loved very much, had decided to leave. And there was no sort of indication in beforehand that this was going to happen or was even an issue. And when she made her mind up, she made her mind up, and there was very little discussion about it. And
you were able to coax her into a little bit of counseling, but to no avail.
No, you know, she, like I said, she made her mind up, and it was, I was devastated. It was.
Now, let's introduce a third party in the room, and that indeed is George. Welcome, George. We don't have a mic, but perhaps our listeners heard a little bit of a...
George relaxing there.
There you go.
So without any recourse, I, you know, really drew into a depression. I was, I didn't manage it well. And I, you know, I focused on work and that part was fine, but I would go home and develop some pretty bad personal habits to try to, you know, avoid the pain I was feeling.
Until you ran into a therapist named Catherine, who in turn turned you to a psychiatrist.
Right. And, you know, it was the last thing in the world that I ever thought I would want or need to do. And I think a lot of people who go down that road never suspect that this is something that they need.
And especially even in 2016, there's this notion that it's a weakness for many to find that kind of avail. And we learn in the book that that was the mindset of your dad, for example.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I kind of grew up thinking if you went to a psychiatrist, you were nuts. And I certainly didn't want to feel like I was, but I also knew that I wasn't well. And, you know, depression's something that kind of creeps up on you. And a lot of people don't even know they have it. And I certainly, at least, you know, those public service announcements that they show on late night TV, they actually work, because I remember at 3 o'clock in the morning holding on to a beer bottle, and I watched one of those public service ads, and I went, "Oh my God, that's me!" And so I knew I needed to get help, and at the time I was ashamed of it, and I kind of dropped out. I didn't talk to any of my friends. I didn't really share what was happening.
You tended to go within, which is common to depression.
Right.
Ironic then that it wasn't a trained therapist, but a friend, Matt, who said you should get a dog.
Exactly. So I guess, you know, things sort of happen for a reason. So Matt's a great guy. He was in our office. He just graduated from school and he loved dogs and he was a very nice guy. And he recognized that I was struggling. And so he kept sort of dropping these hints. I had a house by myself across the street from a nice park where dogs hung out. And so eventually I listened to him and I went out and I found George online and I adopted him without any expectations beyond I was doing him a favor.
What breed?
George is a 140-pound Newfoundland.
Not a little puppy.
No, I mean, I have a tendency, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it big. And I guess getting a dog sort of fell into that. So George he struck me online. His face is very soulful. And even though he was a year old, he sort of had the eyes of an old soul. And these dogs, when you see them online in rescue situations, the clock's ticking.
You found them on a dating service called Pet Finder.
Right. And you know, it's a great website. And people who are looking to adopt a dog, it's a good resource.
I believe you cite a statistic, I think from 2012, the number of dogs that have to be put down because there was no home for them in the United States.
Right.
It's 2.5 million plus?
2.5 million plus. That works out to about 6,700 a day, roughly, which is frightening. You know, these are wonderful, beautiful dogs that don't deserve anything but love and companionship.
And especially the larger dogs are the harder to find homes for, I imagine.
Exactly. They tend to not get picked up as quickly as the quick, cute little dogs. And so George, you know, the clock, I said, the clock was ticking. And I thought, you know, I was saving his life and doing him a favor. And as life evolved after that, I realized he was doing me a way bigger favor in return, especially with the depression that I was dealing with.
The book is a chronology, but we need to go back at this point and talk about your grandfather and summers you recall spending with him on the waterfront in Canada, because what this is a water dog.
Right. You know, my grandfather, I was very fortunate. When I was a kid, I have a younger brother, and my grandfather was a D-Day veteran. He landed over in Normandy on that day, and the whole Saving Private Ryan scenario, he lived through that. So when he landed, he was an engineer. Their landing craft hit a mine right off the beach in Normandy, about 200 yards from shore.
On D-Day.
On D-Day. He was in the first wave. It was like 6:30 in the morning. He was one of the first guys in there. So the fighting was quite heavy, and they were being bombarded. The craft blows up. He's at the back of it. The first half of that craft, people just instantly were killed. But some of the guys survived, but they couldn't swim. And he was uninjured. So he decided, one of the friends right beside him, he said, listen, who had taken some shrapnel, couldn't move. He said, I gotcha. Towed him into shore while all the bullets are coming down, got him secured safely on the beach. Then he turned around, he swam back out to get more guys. And he did that three times before someone saw him. And they said, you can't go back. You have to keep moving forward. You know, you'll get killed and you're more valuable moving forward. So they wouldn't let him go back. But people saw that, and he was decorated. He was decorated with a number of high profile medals for that. So I'm very proud of him. I'm proud of all the veterans from Canada, the U.S., who fought and, you know, really changed history for all of us here.
Deserved adulation from the public at large, but your private relationship and the nugget from that is he introduced you as a young boy to the concept of a free day.
Right. So, you know, he came back from that war, as I'm sure all these veterans do, a changed person. And fortunately for him, they didn't formally diagnose post-traumatic syndrome then, but he certainly had issues with it. But the nice thing that he had the wherewithal to do is that he really valued life. I mean, when I was born as his grandson 20 years later, he was very, very happy. You know, it's my mom's father, so and I have an aunt, so he didn't have boys. So he's a guy's guy, so he taught me how to swim and, you know, all those fun things. But at night, before we would be tucked into bed, and I have a younger brother, you know, we're 5, 6 years old, he said, boys, you have a good day today. And we said, of course, Grandpa, it was really fun. You know, we built sandcastles and we flew kites and all that stuff. And he said, well, when you do those things with people who love you, that's a free day on earth. You don't get old. And says, boys, we had a free day today. And we say, okay. You know, because when you're 5 or 6, that doesn't really, you don't put it in context. But as I got older, and every Christmas and, you know, every birthday, he would make that little speech. And it was his thing. And we loved him for it. And then, you know, life goes on and you pay bills and you get jobs and you've got responsibilities. And so the ability to recognize free days when you were a little kid sort of went away. And the whole premise of the name of the book was, when George and I ended up out in California surfing together, I realized we had a day like that where I felt I didn't get old. And that's the name of the book.
Listeners might discern a hint of a Canadian accent, and it was a work transfer from Toronto to Los Angeles.
Correct. So, you know, I was working in Toronto for a great marketing agency called MKTG, based in New York. And I ran their Canadian office. And then we acquired an office in Los Angeles just after my marriage ended, and just after I got George. So I was transferred down there by the CEO, who's a good friend, and he recognized a change of scenery for me personally and professionally was going to be helpful. And George and I ended up living 2 blocks from the beach in L.A., It was great. It was a great opportunity.
Now, let's note that when you first acquired George, he was skittish, shall we say.
Skittish is a good word. Yeah, you know, he had been neglected, and, you know, there was obvious evidence that potentially of abuse as well. So we really didn't know his story clearly, but he was scared of men. So, you know, I adopted this 140-pound dog who was gender biased, and I was the wrong gender. So it took us a while to kind of, you know, get to a common place. So I took him to obedience school, and I let him.
Appropriately named Who's Walking Who.
Yeah, it's a great handle, isn't it?
It's a great handle, especially with your relationship back
right.
and forth.
Well, he was definitely walking me at the beginning. So we had to figure that out. And, you know, there was a lot going on behind those droopy eyes. He's a very, very bright dog.
Well, indeed, he was the Most Improved Student Award recipient.
It was, that was a pretty, pretty special time. And it was very emotional for me because I wasn't still getting better as fast as I wish I was. And so anytime George made some progress, I took it very personally. And that's part of the whole thing about how he saved me and the lessons I learned from him. Because, you know, I think in the past I might have had a tendency to be impatient with life, you know, with a career and so on. And George had to kind of do things at his own pace. But when he did it like that, he learned and he got better. And so I was watching him and, you know, I went, of course, that makes sense. So, you know, it was a very personal journey for both of us and it was a very happy one.
Though it was merely the first of two awards he received. Years later in California, he won the Crowd Pleaser Award in a surfing competition.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a crazy thing. California is a neat state for unusual and quirky things. And, you know, when we got to California, George is a Newfoundland, so they're bred for water rescue. So I decided, you know, I wanted to try and be local as much as possible. So I rented a surfboard and I went out.
But there's a wonderful passage initially when he first smells the surf, and there was no holding him back, regardless of what kind of training he had prior to that moment.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because he'd never seen the ocean before, and I'm not even sure if he ever swam before. So we end up in the Pacific Ocean, standing on the beach in Hermosa Beach, where dogs actually aren't allowed to go swim on the beach, but he didn't read the sign, neither did I. And he immediately ran for the ocean, and he saw a surfer out there waiting for a wave very patiently. And George, all he did was swim out to this surfer to try and pull him back because that's what they're bred to do. And it's like the DNA kicked in and I had to go out and say, George, come on back. And as soon as he saw me in the water, he was determined to come and save me. And it's a bonding moment. That 15 minutes in the water in California, that the first day we're there, it changed our relationship very dramatically, very quickly. And then he just never left my side.
Had you grown up with dogs or was this your first?
No, first. Yeah.
Well, you dove right in with the 140-pound water-retrieving dog.
Yeah, I'm lucky. I'm very happy I did that.
What's this tour like that you're embarked on? I understand we're your second stop of many.
Yeah, it's very exciting. You know, I'm very grateful to my publisher, Penguin Random House. They really saw the value in the book. So they invested in sending us across the U.S. to go to 26 cities over a 5-week period.
And part of that investment is also you giving back in terms of letting audience members know about avails for homeless pets.
Absolutely. So one of the things I'm very proud of is that Pedigree is helping us sponsor feeding shelter animals with a program called Feed the Good. And it's a great program. Their goal is to feed 10 million bowls of food to homeless dogs in the next year. So George and I have the opportunity when we stop in all the cities, we're going to local shelters and we're donating food on behalf of Pedigree. To help meet that goal of theirs. And then we go to bookstores and we're doing book signings in every city. And we're doing great media interviews like with people like you. It's very exciting. It's
well,
very
thank
fun.
You so much. Also to backtrack, describe how this dog that you met named Kong evolved to George.
So, you know, I believe he was actually nameless when the people got him out of his situation and into a foster home. And the foster family that took George for the first couple of days had a young daughter. She was about 6 or 7. And the little girl called him Kong as a placeholder more than anything. And it's funny, when I met him, you know, it's a bit of a novelty name. It just didn't suit him. So I didn't even, had him for about maybe 2 or 3 days before the name George really kind of lifted his head.
After discounting Oscar and Spot.
Right. Although he's got that big Spot, that would have been old school. But yeah, George fits, he's a George. It fits him.
And you're a Colin. Thanks so much for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
Dave, thank you very much. Appreciate having us here.
Colin Campbell, author of Free Days with George, One Very Big Dog.